Hello and welcome to the ArmFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. On this week's episode, we talked about government interference and the independence at the Reserve Bank of India. This is Ellie Groves from London, and today we are talking to Lord Meghnad Desai. He is chairman of the advisory board here at ArmFIF and is also Emeritus Professor of Economics at the London School of Economics and Political Science. I think we will start with a summary of the current economic state in India and why might the Modi government be putting this pressure on the Reserve Bank of India at this current time.
Thank you, Ellie. In general macroeconomic terms, India is doing all right. It is currently the fastest growing economy in the world and has been for the last 3 years. As China is slowing down, India is growing. But India grows at about between 7 to 7.5% per annum, real GDP growth. So it's not double digit like China, but it is very good for India. And inflation is reasonably low. So that way it is having a good time. The general elections are due next year, March 2019, and in a lot of excitement about that because people are wondering whether Narendra Modi would be returned with a single party majority. He's in a coalition, but his own party can have a majority. If that can happen a second time, then that will make him very powerful indeed. The opposition is trying to combine into a single coalition against him. We will see what happens there. I think whatever happens, the BJP will be winning and their coalition will be in power. We don't know how many seats they will get now, but most likely Modi will stay. So now you're asking, what is the thing behind the battle between the central government and the Reserve Bank of India? I think there are three things mainly. First of all, India has had some horrendous cases of non-performing assets in government-owned banks. Banks were nationalized way back in 1969 by the then Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. And these banks have been found giving away rather large infrastructure loans to companies which have no intention of paying them back. So the government has been trying to improve the structure of the legislation for recovering losses and so on to get borrowers to follow the rules. But it also wants liquidity to go on flowing. And the Reserve Bank of India has taken a view that if the banks are in trouble, they have to take a prompt corrective action, which means make them not give out any more money. So the government feels relaxed, please, you know, let them have a credit so they can lend. That's one thing. Secondly, I think in general, the government feels that the Reserve Bank of India is too much anti-inflation, too much high interest rate, and they should make special concession for small and medium industries and so on. And third is a very peculiar contention, is the Reserve Bank of India has to pay some money by course of dividend each year to the government. That's happened. But the government kind of is, as like all governments, slightly hard up about its budget deficit and so on. So they take the view that Reserve Bank of India has excessive reserves against likely crisis and they should relax and give away some of money to the government. Now, the Reserve Bank of India was set up in 1935. It's one of the oldest central banks in the world. But when it was set up, it was very clear that it had no autonomy. The bank was a creature of the government. And lately, since other countries have had central bank independence, now it is recognized that banks should have independence in the anti-inflation policy, it has its own monetary policy committee and so on. But when this comes, the government is feeling very greedy. And a lot of us, people who have been abroad and who have had experience of independent central banks, have been warning the government not to harass the Reserve Bank of India because the reputation of India as a good place to invest in, which is sort of worldwide, it would really be spoiled if the government is seen interfering with the central bank. So let's hope the good sense prevails and nothing happens. But that's a fight worth fighting, and a lot of us are writing articles and making speeches. So right now there is a test going on about how much autonomy should the Reserve Bank of India have as against the government.
Thank you. If you could perhaps expand a little bit more on why it is so important to have this central bank independence, and then perhaps as part of that also look to what impact the government interference on the Reserve Bank of India might have on the wider economy in the domestic market. I think those two things might go hand in hand and answer each other.
No, indeed, you know, what people don't realize is that historically we had a gold standard. For many, many years, it was, you know, at least three centuries, we had a gold standard in which no country or no bank had freedom to print money as they liked, because they had to print as much money comparable to the gold reserves. And there had to be a fixed exchange rate between gold and the currency. And since every currency was in gold, you had fixed exchange rates. There was no exchange rate market. Then in 1971, Americans, who were at that time the anchor of the gold standard, pricing gold at $35 an ounce, and they stood ready to convert dollar into gold. If you had surplus dollars, you could bring, the government could bring it, and the U.S. will pay it back in gold. People were losing their confidence in the dollar, and they wanted to have gold. America decided they're not going to give up any gold. They went to the gold standard. So all the currencies were simultaneously devalued. And you know, nowadays we have gold at something like $1,200, $1,300. So you can see how far we have come from $35 an ounce to $1,200 an ounce. So then the question became, what would be the criteria by which the government would avoid inflation? That is when people said, trust the central bank to look after that, because governments always want to spend too much money and tax too little. There's always a democratic temptation to sort of play the, in the kind of political business cycle. And so governments can't be trusted, but central banks can be trusted. And we can say the central bank should have a legislation in which it is a guardian of the anti-inflation policy. It controls money supply, and the government has to promise not to run deficits and so on. So it became, and that doctrine has been going on for the last, 45 years. And because now we have a global capital market, foreign countries or foreign investors want to invest in any country, they'll first check, is the central bank independent? So, you know, that it will not be either too much inflation or too much depreciation of the currency, and an economy would be healthy. The investors very much want to have a good, moderate, prudent central bank. They also would like governments to control the deficits and so on, but at least they would like the central bank to be their friend and guardian in seeing that the economy doesn't run off on an inflationary spiral. So that is why central bank independence has become like an important consideration in the global market today.
Thank you. Looking outward, what impact could the potential government interference policies have on international investment into India, the global view of India?
India has been very lucky in the last 10 years of getting a lot of foreign investment. Historically, India was very nationalist, didn't like foreign capital, tried to discourage and so on. But for the last sort of 20 years, they've been trying to encourage. And a lot of foreign capital has gone to India. It's a fast-growing economy, large population, a big domestic market. And, you know, the middle class is probably 200 million. And that's a lot of middle class to have. So people like to invest in India, but they're always worried whether the exchange rate will depreciate, the rupee will depreciate against the dollar and so on. So it's very important that India have a exchange rate climate which is healthy. Now, what's happened lately is that partly because of Trump's tax policy, tax cuts, money has been going back to America from all sorts of outside the world, and the investor is becoming very conscious that although India is a fast-growing economy, the rupee may depreciate, in which case they won't get the good enough return for that money, because they'll have when they try to reconvert into dollars and so on. So people are moving money out of India. Then this battle became somewhat serious. And so it's very important that India has a good reputation. India has foreign capital coming in, and it remains there. It remains there and adds to the growth rate of the economy.
Looking more to the political aspect for a moment, India is often referred to as the world's largest democracy. Is this interference to the central bank potentially putting that at risk, or is it just an economic indicator?
Well, you see, what it is, India is world's largest democracy. 5 years ago, or 4 years ago, when the elections took place in 2014, the electorate was 800 million people, and it's a very lively democracy with lots of political parties and big debate, and very open debate, and people demonstrate and all this. And it's an amazing, I call it a hyper-democracy, it's an amazing democracy. What happens is that usually governments are coalition governments that are not very powerful. But lately, we have had a powerful government led by in a majority of one party and a very powerful prime minister. In that case, you may have, not because of democracy, but because the government, which is a strong government, may feel like pushing its way around. And since technically the central bank is owned by the government, it may say, why doesn't they do what we tell them to do? So that kind of psychology has got into the government for the last 9 months. Elections are coming soon, and if they can do a bit of spending splurge to win votes, you know, why not? And of course, the central bank has to say, look, you can't do this because it's not very good for the economy. You will spark up inflation, you will spark up depreciation of the rupee. Now, one very wise thing the government of India and Reserve Bank of India have done is they have not tried to peg the rupee at a particular value. They're avoiding too much volatility, but they're not defending a certain value. So the rupee has slipped by sort of 10 to 15% in the last 3-4 months. And so people are aware that that brings in inflation if rupee depreciates, because, for example, petrol is imported and petrol is part of the living cost. So it's very important that India have a foreign exchange which is stable, and that it avoids inflation. And for that, the government has to cooperate with the central bank so that goals are achieved. One thing I have to say, the Indian voting public is very averse to inflation. They really don't like inflation. They definitely don't like inflation in prices of daily consumption goods, fruit and vegetables and cooking oil and so on. If those prices go up, they throw the government out. The government has to be very careful about it. Onion prices are very important in India.
Looking again globally, what precedents might this interference have on other countries where the government is also putting pressure on their central banks?
Well, we have the pattern that in Argentina, and a few years ago, the government sacked the central bank governor and there was a huge depreciation of the peso. In Turkey recently, there has been a battle between President Erdogan and the central bank again. When President Erdogan tried to boss the central bank, the lira collapsed. But you can see that as governments get hard up for money, as governments get keen about growth and so on, it's very tempting to say, what do banks have? Banks have money. Why can't I have that money from the bank? It's my bank. So it's very important that governments restrain themselves and not harass their central banks, because the reputation of a country, the reputation of its currency, the investment climate and the growth prospects all depend upon a stable price level, a good exchange rate policy and good balanced budget.
Thank you. Do you think that there is a way for the Reserve Bank of India to hold fast onto its independence, especially in the next few months leading up to the election in 2019 and facing the political pressures which come with such an event?
Yeah, well, you know, the recent, very recent developments indicated that the government is going to step back, that there was an informal meeting between the Prime Minister and the Reserve Bank of India governor a couple of days ago, and the government has held off any big move, because a lot of Indian economists live abroad, and they have their influential writers, and they've all been saying, don't do this, just leave the RBI alone, because if the governor was to resign, as the previous governor resigned, it really hit India's reputation very, very badly. And so I think we are all, you know, I myself including, and as some other people, we are all writing articles and saying, look, just restrain yourself, leave the bank alone. And Urjit Patel, who is the governor of the RBI, is a very fine, good central banker, and he deserves all the support we can give it.
Looking for a moment to past decisions made by the Modi government, namely the injection of investment into unregulated shadow banks following the demonetization drive, which was the policy in 2016. This meant that large volumes of cash were being invested in the money markets funds, who then funded non-banking financial companies, with a quarter of these funding being short-term. Is there a risk that India will find itself in the same position as the US 10 years ago, which led to the 2007-2008 financial crisis, where the institutions that relied on these large quantities of short-term wholesale funding were the worst hit as their funding dried up as soon as the markets began to panic?
Well, one of the recent collapse of what ILNFS Bank is called, it was one of those shadow banks, and government had to move in very fast and sort of basically nationalize the Life Insurance Corporation, which is a government-owned insurance body, which is very asset-rich. It just went in and bought the thing. Government had to constitute a new board to stabilize the bank. And I think there is always that kind of fragility because although there was demonetization, recently, after whenever the currency is printed, there is new kind of currency flows which are trying to evade tax and trying to make quick money and so on. So government has to always keep an eye, or let the Reserve Bank of India keep an eye on the growth of these shadow banks. And again, there is a sort of a conflict because the government wants growth. The government wants money to be out there, being given its credit. And the Reserve Bank of India says, no, not this. Stop the party, I'm going to take away the punch bowl, as someone said. Because the Reserve Bank of India has to control the liquidity from going out of control and causing crashes and losses, as you said. So I think this is a tension which most rapidly growing economy face. Over the last 20 years, India's nominal GDP growth has been between 12 and 15% per year. At that stage, an economy doubles in 6 years in size. And the economy, the Indian economy, has grown something like 8 times in the last 20 years. And when something like that happens, a lot of money floating around and a lot of temptation to do fly-by-night operations. Somebody has to keep an eye, and the central bank is the best institution. The government is not a good institution to keep an eye on bad behavior in the market.
Thank you very much. I think we've covered a variety of topics that all center around the importance of the central bank independence and the potential challenges and frictions that might continue to be faced over the next few months and indeed following the election as well. So thank you very much, Lord Desai, for joining us. And thank you very much to everyone listening to this podcast. We hope you will tune in for future discussions. A new podcast is released every week. So do keep an eye out on our website, subscribe to our channel, and if you've enjoyed the program, then please do leave us a review. Thank you.